This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored in part by our good friends at TradeStation. Get 90 days of free trading and more. We'll tell you how.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Take me back to 1999. Coupons.com surges in its IPO. China exports plunge, and the unemployment rate rises to 6.7%. And we have guest Howard Lindzen with us today. All this and much more on episode number 354 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Hey there, Andrew Horowitz here, and there is lots to talk about today. We're going to have a lot of information to talk about because, man, there's a lot going on in the world. I mean, we have the headline over the weekend that China's exports plunge 18% compared to a year ago. Now, there's some discussion, of course, about how there was distortions in the numbers due to the fact that they had those weird export numbers that weren't really believable. And who knows right now if we get a little bit of a twist and a turn and some bullish commentary out that, well, there was that change recently in how they are, in fact, looking at and reporting their numbers, so maybe there's something to be said about that's not so bad. Well, if you look at their manufacturing index, if you look at the situation that's going on with their bad loans, if you look at all the things that are happening in China and the region around them, you have to realize that there is some probable truth to the fact that there is a slowdown going on in that country. And that being the case, you have to add to that the idea that over the last several months, there was a mismatch in the imports. We talked about this a few different times. This mismatch is really important to look at because the mismatch of the exports that they said they had compared to the imports of other countries didn't add up. In fact, they said very simply that, well, we're finding a lot lower imports compared to the exports. So therefore, the idea that there still is some bad movement of goods across the country lines in the form of exports was continuing. And therefore, we have to realize that, unfortunately, we don't want to hear it, and we don't want to accept it, and we don't want to deal with it. But there are some problems in that area. And if you think about it for a second, just simply looking at how that country's markets have performed over the last, we'll say, I don't know, 3 months. There really is something to be said about the fact that, hey, you know what? Maybe there is something going on behind the scenes that really is percolating up and is a problem. And if you look at what's going on in the U.S. markets, even with a 5 or 6 or 7 different indicators that are reporting economic data in a row are showing that things aren't so good. Yeah, we did see that the employment number last week on Friday was 175 versus 163. We did see a tick up of the unemployment rate to 6.7 from 6.6. And we did see also, remember, a very light ISM manufacturing number. We're seeing the factory orders are just okay. And if you go back and look at all of the different numbers, the important numbers over the last month. There has been a few that have been better than expected. And those that are better than expected, by the way, have really been good. Look at the new housing numbers that were just way off the mark. I mean, so good, you have to question the data, in fact, just like you would do if they were really so bad. You know, we're seeing that time and time again that the weather is being blamed for everything. I can't wait, by the way, till the weather issue is just behind us, so that somebody can look at the numbers realistically and just look at the numbers. Because every single number right now, we have two things that goes along with it, right? We have, number one, the weather. Everything's the weather. The weather, the weather. And the second thing is, well, if it's bad, the Fed. Once we get that out of the way, we can have a stock market that returns to normality, where you don't see that at 9:30 in the morning, there's just a tremendous amount of push into the market, and at the end of the day, there's the desire just to buy in no matter what. Look what happened Friday. Most of the day, the markets were down. S&P, the Dow, Dow actually held up pretty well on Friday, but at the same time, you saw the NASDAQ really take a beating. In fact, many of the Momo names, many of the leaders that we saw recently, we've talked about the leaders, the names like Tesla, Twitter, you look at Apple, these names started to come under pressure on Friday pretty significantly, Facebook. And as a matter of fact, Thursday, they started to just turn around a bit. Now, they weren't down 5 or 8 or 10%. No, they, you know, 1, 2, 3%. But these guys have been on a roll for a while. And I said that when those start to turn, and we see a significant amount of turn without an instantaneous move to the other side, that's when we need to be aware that something is changing. Also realize that aside from China, the whole grumblings over in Crimea and the Ukraine are continuing. Now, we have the U.S. that's shaking a finger at Russia and saying, hey, don't do that because all these sanctions. And Russia said this weekend, hey, you know what? Do me a favor. Don't push these sanctions and don't really press them because they're going to boomerang on you and it's not going to be very pretty. We also saw that natural gas is seeing a bit of whipsaw action. Oil is continuing to move higher and emerging market currencies are selling off again. Now, this doesn't mean that the bull is over, no. This doesn't mean that I'm being really negative, no. Just facts, just some things that we need to look at and see what's going on in the current environment right now. Now, what's going to happen next week with the markets? You know, right now, as we have mentioned and we've seen, there's no question about the fact that there is an extreme appetite for U.S. equities. And this all turned around in February. We saw that January was a really rough month, really for no reason. There wasn't anything that was coming out that was that terrible or that was that revealing. There wasn't earnings or economic. Nothing really was that terrible. It was just a change of sentiment, a change of dynamic. That then turned on a dime in February. And March, I would probably say that is neutral. We've had some up days. We have some down days. There's a bit of a tug and war going on right now between those wanting to sell and the wanting to buy any dip possible, because so far over the last, you know, what, year and a half, that any dip has become a viable opportunity. Now, one of the things that I wanted to really get to and talk about is the whole idea about China, as we mentioned earlier, and what's happening. You know, we saw also the first corporate bond default in history in China. Shanghai Chorai Solar Energy Sciences and Technology Corporation, I probably butchered that name, but it failed to pay the full interest on its onshore bonds. And this is the first default, as I said, and a number of companies right now are struggling with their debt. We've seen that, and we also know that the corporate sector, along with the banking sector itself, is having some difficulty. The banking sector is having difficulty because individuals and speculators, as well as any of the loans that they have given out, are showing a much higher rate of deficiency overall. Now, how is that going to affect the world? Right now, it does seem that the money that has been or had been flowing into China has stopped, and there is an outflow into U.S. equities. Because if you really think about it, look around the world for a second, and where would you want to put your money? Well, there's been a bit of a change in the last, let's call it 2 weeks with the whole Russian thing. But even before that, where would you want to put your money? Would you want to put it in the emerging markets, Latin America, which has really been awful for the most part, and there's a lot of underlying tension there? Would you want to put it in Asia, where you see that there is also tension? Look at Thailand. You saw that China's been slowing down for a number of months. Japan, well, we see that the ratings for Shinzo Abe has been dropping. We see that is real question as to really the ability for them to continue on the level of stimulus that they have, and that their third arrow in the plan that they have to stimulate the economy and to get themselves out of this morass that's been there for, 20 years in this deflationary spiral is really coming to a point of whether or not this can be done. We saw that many of the companies are not going to be raising the income levels, even though they've had a much better time of it with with the yen being so low. And right now, if you look around at Europe, you have to say of late that, well, you know, this whole Russian thing affects them pretty dramatically, particularly with their oil prices and energy issues. Is that somewhere where I want to be? So what does that leave you, really? Where are you going to go? Are you going to go to gold, possibly, as a as an alternative to investing? And maybe if you wanted to look at some individual positions of stocks in certain countries on a one-off basis here or there, okay, great. But in general, the U.S. is the only place if you're going to be determined to invest in stocks. So what's happening right now is there is a significant amount of desire to be in U.S. stocks, even though we are seeing, as I mentioned earlier, a tremendous drop in the surprise to the upside, or I should say a real increase to the surprise to the downsides of economics. When we look at the Economic Surprise Index, which is calculated looking at what analysts and economists look at for, okay, what's going to be the number that we're going to see for, you know, XYZ economics, and actually what happens, what comes in, that has been shooting straight down. As a matter of fact, there has been a 20% divergence in terms of the Z-score. So we're looking at a big, we'll call it statistical anomaly that's happening here that we haven't seen since back in, you know, early parts of 2011. It's really dropping off. Now, usually what happens here is that a couple of months later, you do see that the stock market follows. You do see some kind of a correlation that does happen 2-3 months ahead. But you know what? We're not seeing that right now. To the contrary, we're seeing that there's still a lot of money being put into the U.S. equities. And even though we're seeing that the Economic Surprise Index is, in fact, moving lower substantially. So I would just take that in terms of the you know, the overall, and just take that with a grain of salt, not as anything that's dire and immediate to deal with, but just something that you want to look at. And I think that's something that, you know, is going to become more and more important if, in fact, we do see that the Economic Surprise Index and the economic surprises continue to be on the downside. Now, we do see that the euro, I don't know if you watched the currencies last week, but from not only the effect of Russia, but also what happened on Friday. You know, into Friday, we saw that the euro had been moving higher, and we saw that gold, in fact, is silver, for example, moving higher. Oil's been moving up with the news items and the headlines from Russia, Crimea, Ukraine. But on Friday, the dollar started moving up dramatically. And that really put a kink in the movement of the euro, which dropped about 1% or so. And that's because the number was better in terms of expectations. There was a lot of concern that the weather was going to have a major detrimental effect on hiring, when in fact we had a better hiring number. It's still not in the 200s, but 175 compared to where it was, and last month was revised higher. That's good. So I think overall, the bottom line to what I'm saying here is that there is a better chance of a better flow in the U.S. right now, at least as investors are seeing it, compared to the rest of the world. And also remember that the rest of the world is, in fact, showing some signs of economic slowdown. And you can see that with copper. Copper hit a 7-month low on Friday. 7-month low. Over the weekend, we saw the flow of information that showed us how much of the imports were for copper and lead and various commodities overall for China. And they were lower, generally speaking. A couple of them were better, but generally speaking, they were a bit lower. So anyway, the bottom line to all this is that there is a bit of a change in the economic environment. And with the Fed committed to stopping their bond buying program probably by the end of this year in total, I think there's something to pay attention to here. And, you know, you should wake up to, okay, well, where are the short opportunities? Now, they'll appear, and they'll usually happen pretty quickly, but you should get that on your watch list, something to take a look at. Now, one of the ways we do that is through, as I mentioned earlier, we have a watch list on our radar screen. with TradeStation. We also have it in Bloomberg. But in TradeStation, what's really nice is you can set these nice alarms. They're very easy to change. You put your stocks in there. You put them down. It looks like a pretty much an Excel spreadsheet. And you just take the price and you say, okay, alert me if the price gets to this point. And you can put your indicators on there, whether it's your moving averages or any of the indicators that are available through the trading app store. And that's what's so great about TradeStation. Now, I know they are a sponsor, and you know they're a sponsor of the show. What's nice is that you can actually get TradeStation for 90 days. You can get free trading. You can get the cost of the actual platform for free and a host of other things as well. They also have a lot of great education on Tuesdays. Every other week, we actually host a stocks and ETFs conference through a webinar. And when we're not there, there's somebody else there at 11 a.m. You could do it for free. You could check it out. Every morning they have their Monday morning commentary. There is just a whole host of things. They also have just a tremendous amount of new and I think very unique indicators that come out on a regular basis that TradeStation Labs puts out along with the Trading App Store, which is a plug-in process where you just say, okay, I want to look at and try, let's say, a particular indicator that is put out by XYZ company. You could try it. It just attaches right into your system. Oftentimes, there are really nice guides along with it and educational materials that go along with it to train you and to show you what's happening with it. And if you like it, you could buy it. There's usually a nominal monthly fee, and that's great stuff. TradeStation, you got to check it out. Go over to TradeStation.com or just go to our website, actually. You can get the link to the special offer. And you also, if you don't have a TradeStation account right now, you can actually get some of these indicators that we put out for free. Great stuff at TradeStation.com. We love them. We think that their platform is the best in the industry for stocks, options, futures, Forex. You really need to check it out and do yourself a favor if you're not only if you're trading, but if you're investing on a swing basis, because they have it all. It's good stuff. Let's get to our guest, Howard Lindzen. This is a very interesting guy. We had him on some time ago and a good friend of mine since the early days of when we started the podcast. I think he's a guy, a serial entrepreneur, and someone who's going to share with us probably some really good information. Howard Lindzen is the co-founder and chairman of StockTwits, but that's not the only thing. Howard is, I've known Howard for years. He has founded several different companies, involved in a list of companies that is pretty impressive, like Life360, BillGuard, Bitly, Blog Talk Radio, also founded and sold Wallstrip, involved previously with MyTrade, Buddy Media, long list of things. My friend, how are you?
I'm polar vortex.
This whole polar vortex thing is just out of control. For a while, I was thinking, every time I said it, I wanted to just do like a polar vortex. You know, between that and blaming everything on the weather is all we have for us right now. But
yeah, listen, I grew up in Toronto. I don't know why people still live there. Listen, everybody in Toronto thinks it's a great city. Everybody in Chicago thinks it's a great city.
I was just up in New York last week, and I got to tell you, I spent 3 days there. That's enough of the cold. Let's just start off with talking about StockTwits. Now, one of the things that you did some time ago was really revolutionize the whole way that Twitter was being used for talking about stocks, because there was no real way besides maybe hashtags to get a consolidation of information about a stock. And then on top of that, the question was, well, who's talking about it and maybe who should I listen to? Because anybody can, you know, get a Twitter account and just talk all sorts of stuff about a stock. So tell me a little bit about StockTwits.
Okay. So exactly what you said, because you were an early adopter of social. You know, I'm using this. I stupidly passed on an investment because I didn't envision of the use case that everybody started using it. The tech guys were using it about where location, which is not that important anymore other than for data, to Foursquare and some other companies like PlaceIQ, which I'm an investor in. So, my investments cross over my use cases, meaning if I use something a lot, I figure out how to invest in that. And I wanted to talk about stocks. And in the BlackBerry craze, Wall Street was in love with BBM. Most technology is abused by the financial sector. So whether it was chat, ICQ that was really being used for brokers and financial You know, that was the big use case that mattered. And then we go to BBM, where it mattered to off the corporate email accounts to be chattering about blocks of shares and inside information, to Twitter. And people thought it would be crazy that people would talk publicly about stocks. But what they failed to understand is that Twitter created a new language. And with the fall, and just like the Peloton in cycling, which in a Peloton, they can go 10 to 15, 20% faster than they could on their own. The Peloton in the social web is infinite, meaning your learning curve is sped up to infinite levels. So the way I looked at Twitter is, oh my God, I'm plugged into the smartest people. And if I did that for stocks and trading, I could help people catapult themselves in what took 10 years, maybe 6 months. And so that was the thesis. The vision was also around, Twitter's so vast and so much spam. I needed to figure out a way to build community and a positive community, because that's how we think. And then third was, how do we organize this information? And, you know, the team came up with the dollar sign as a way of organizing it. And originally we were using the Twitter API, but we quickly realized that that would not end well. And so we foresaw building our own platform. And so with StockTwits, you can push into Twitter and everywhere else and all these financial verticals that we've plumbed, or you can just hang out on StockTwits. But you know that on StockTwits, you're going to be talking with like-minded people that love stocks all day, 24/7. And meaning at 4 o'clock, if we had the data and we could connect you with Japanese people doing the same things, you'd be just like rolling over into the Japanese market. So eventually, just like markets, StockTwits will be 24/7, all the markets traded. You'll be friends with people all over the world. You have doppelganger. You know, there's a guy in China who thinks just like me. Why shouldn't I be connected with him and putting my money to work 24/7 in those markets? So think of StockTwits as like a Peloton for finance. You know, some people take the lead and share more ideas than others, other people's, draft. And some people, everybody can get something out of it that they want. Does that help?
Yeah, no, it's great. Now, it's interesting that one of the things I remember was that there was a time when you'd have a lot of people putting up their own charts and stuff. And you actually were able to, I think you built, didn't you build a charting platform, right?
We didn't build our own. We built a site called Chartly that just allowed you to organize them. But really, we rolled that into StockTwits itself. Mm-hmm. So you can do everything in StockTwits, one brand. I think charting is an important part of who our audience is, and we're our next generation of the product will have better charting. Just like Twitter has Instagram and Facebook has photos. I mean, pictures tell 1,000 words. Well, I'm not technically oriented. I do think it's much easier to look at 500 pictures of stocks than look at 500 macroeconomic reports. I mean, price and volume, we can talk about volume declining and its importance, but price, volume, and social groups and sentiments are all that matter to me in pattern recognition. So I think it'll become important. I'm a personal investor in a company called ChartIQ, which is really thoughtful, elegant, mobile and HTML5 charting products. So I'm trying to put all the pieces together, whether StockTwits builds them or we invest in them. That's how we think about the landscape.
So is there a way, or maybe you don't care, a lot of these sites I've been noticing, for example, I'll mention a site and not to disparage them, but Seeking Alpha, for example, back in the day, we used to take all of our information. I just finally said, I'm not working with them for a variety of different reasons, but there's a lot of, slash jobs done on there, right? For the intent of trying to benefit the writer, it seems. Yeah. And how do you, is there a way, maybe there's no way to do this really, but how do you separate, the bad apples, if you will, the bad players that are just out there to finding, good information? I know you have a pay-for service, right?
Yeah, well, again, bad apples. We're talking about the financial industry.
Right, which is a bad apple anyway.
So I assume every apple is bad. And you can't win. There's only way two ways to win. You can curate. We have house rules. And our house rules, we take, that's our Bill of Rights. Okay? They're right there. When we kick people off, we send them our house rules. We give them a few chances. If a guy comes onto the site or a woman or whatever, and their first few uses of the site are in a derogatory and political and negative way, mm-hmm. that's as good as they're going to be.
Mm-hmm.
There is, you know, this is not a public site. This is a free site. It's governed by some rules. And eventually, if the community takes on, becomes what the founders want it to become, if you want it to be a free-for-all, you get Seeking Alpha. And by the way, I have a huge problem with Seeking Alpha, but guess what? They're part of my overall view that it's all bad.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, I'm not going to try and convince you that Stock Twits is good. I'll be dead of old age. we let the product speak for itself. You come out and said, I don't like, I didn't have to prompt you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when people mention the name Seeking Alpha, you know, they don't have anything good to say. And if they do have anything good to say, they're part of that machine that is benefiting from the curation that they imply, which is putting what I continue to see from the complaint is attacking companies.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's a place for that in the market. You know, unfortunately, you know, that happens to stocks. I mean, stocks are the worst piece of paper that you can try and teach people. This is like, they are emotionally, other than emotion, they trace almost basically at nothing. You are the lowest common denominator in the food chain of the cap structure of that company.
Mm-hmm.
And this is like going to say, everybody's out to get me. If you recognize that everybody's out to get you, and that by owning common stock, you were at the whim of like the most awful universe up against you, then you have an opportunity to make money. Then it comes down to, okay, I get that. So how do I win knowing all that? You can index yourself like you think about long-term value investing, which is dollar cost averaging, you know, monthly, quarterly, and the lowest cost type assets for the rest of your life, and you will make money. There's positive expectancy to that. Or you can treat it like a business and a hobby and have a great time and learn the language. If I told you we were teaching how to speak Chinese in 6 months, you would pay a lot of money for that. Yet, if I tell you you can learn how to read the tape or learn how to do the stock market in 6 months, there's zero value on that. Great. If people want to learn the most important language in the world that's applicable across the universe, you know, that's more opportunity for me. But that's the way I look at how this stuff is done. And with the tools of today, anybody can learn the language.
Right.
Now, once you're on with the language, you can surf and you can go to Seeking Alpha. Guess what? Because you speak the language and you'll be able to understand that it's bullshit.
Right. You know, what's interesting is the one thing that just boggles my mind about Seeking Alpha is that I've seen some slash jobs done by writers who have maybe one or two stories, and they could take down a stock 20%, which is fascinating.
Yeah, but I could do the same. Let's face it. I mean, I could do the same with my audience, and it doesn't sell. Listen, there's Montel Williams. This is when I started Wall Street, right? My idea of Wall Street was, yeah, I could do slash jobs, but I'd rather talk about the companies that are doing well. They're going to talk to me. The employees are happy. Stocks in motion tend to stay in motion. When you're doing a slash job, you're just digging under the surface. So, yes, there's a market for Montel Williams. But Oprah Winfrey is the wealthiest person in the world, woman in the world. And she looks at the world as a glass half full. So I think they've chosen their lot in life. It's very advertising driven. It's very precarious trust situation that they've added to that situation. So they own that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's interesting. You bring up Montel Williams. Yeah, I was actually a guest on that show like 15 years ago. I don't think I don't even know if he has a show anymore. Talk to me a little bit about the, you know, some of the newer things that you're working on.
The newer stuff I'm working on is obviously further, you know, products to help people get up to speed on the market. So, you know, with StockTwits, we're reimagining the product for mobile. Our mobile product's growing super fast, and I never really, finance and mobile is going to be the slowest to catch on because people are used to having three or four screens. So it's taken us a lot of time to figure out mobile, but we figured out a product that's growing really fast. It's really your trending tickers, your watch list, and then a quick dive into what the streams are saying. And people seem to love that. On the web, we're reimagining more visual, we're reimagining more discovery, and reimagining just different ways to communicate, either whether it's long form and building your own blog right on StockTwits. So we're thinking through technology more than we are community. You know, I'm full-time focused now on the brand and community and partnerships. So that gives me time to think about where the industry is headed. I'm investing in a lot of, what the advantage that I have, it's a social form of inside information, is StockTwits has an API, which we let other people tap into. So I have a good bird's eye view into what ideas are catching on within StockTwits, whether it's charting or data or so for me, I can make, different bets based on which products or companies may be interesting, whether I want to invest in them or not. But I feel like the industry's finally over the hump. You have social media bringing down the walls of Wall Street. I mean, Bloomberg, let's face it, an incredible company, but it's a social network that costs $2,000 to get into. And then once you're in, most people use it for chat, right? Because most people still trade the same. If you're not trading bonds, most people still trade the same. Therefore, it's a matter of, Bloomberg slowly becoming a media company because there's no growth on the $2,000 a month business, and the Chinese and Indians aren't going to pay $2,000 a month. They won't pay $2,000 a month for anything, let alone financial information. And then you have Twitter, which and Facebook, which have kind of opened up the walls. And so, if you're in college, you have this group that you've formed on Facebook, and that's your network. And as you move into the real world, you'll always have that network and that language that you learn. I don't think as many people will be interested in learning the language of Bloomberg because it's so limited to just being in Bloomberg. And as the financial world grows in globalness, and as Twitter and StockTwits and LinkedIn become the tools that people use to get their job and to network, going inside that silo is going to become less and less, it'll never go away, but it'll become less and less the only way to make money in the markets per se for institutions. So I think, investing around these walls coming down are what interests me.
It's interesting. I use Bloomberg, and I am one of those people that pays $2,000 a month. And, just as a point of reference, obviously, if you want to do your own research, Bloomberg is off the hook. I mean, it's ridiculous. Yeah. But the big question then also becomes, moving forward in time when there is more, I don't know if it's information available. We'll talk about, more discussion available. That's a different discussion, right? Information versus discussion. The interesting thing is that I am finding that more and more, and this may change, but more and more that some of the information you get may have less and less meaning. Because you mentioned in the beginning that stocks are all, motion based and momentum based, et cetera. So, look at Tesla. Okay, great. I love the car, love the company. Everything's great. Love Musk. Everything's great. But you start looking at traditional valuations, even trying to speculate the future, you can't come up with any kind of reason to invest.
Yeah. So it was overvalued from the day it came public to a value investor, right? Because no matter how much you read, my opinion, remember, this is just my opinion. There's a million ways to make money. And Bloomberg, obviously, it's a phenomenal product, or 300,000 people wouldn't pay $2,000 a month. Okay? But for the average person, can't afford that. So now we're trying to teach people, well, how do you do it there? There's two ways to do it. Like I said, you can dollar cost, lowest cost, you manage your cost and consistently invest equal amounts of money and then rebalance quarterly or semi-annual or annual. Or learn how to speak the language and do this. If you're learning how to speak the language, markets rarely make sense. I mean, I don't understand overvalued, undervalued. Stocks are constant motion, and people are people. Knowing that, stocks are rarely valued properly. They swing from undervaluation to overvaluation, and maybe once or twice a year they're properly priced. So assuming all that, I throw at all my research. And what I try and understand is where the money is going to flow. And luckily for me, I've come up with some simple things that I talk about on StockTwits, and I talk about on my blog, and I talk about in our paid product. And that's about connecting markets. Figure out where money is flowing from startups to public companies, and then try and get in front of these big trends. Meaning, the great thing about all these humongous mutual funds and ETFs is how humongous they are. Meaning, if I want to get in the robotics business and I'm T. Rowe Price, there's like two companies that they can put enough money to work to get action, to check off the box that they're in robotics. Now, if I'm in robotics, I can buy 30 companies. right? And all I have to do is figure out which those two dummies are going to buy down the line so they can say in their quarterly report that they own robots. And that's how I look at how the markets work. And until that stops working, I'm trying not to complicate it further than that. But I'm just playing who's the dummy. And I figure the slowest money and the biggest money is actually at the biggest disadvantage when it comes to being small. So it's just like a shark and a pilot fish. You know, the shark has great. They're in the press all every day. They have the mangly teeth. We know who they are. But the pilot fish, the little ones swimming underneath, have no problem living large. And that's the way I look at myself as an individual investor. As long as I don't poke my head out too far, as long as I know who I am in the ecosystem, there is plenty of food for me.
Now, that's different than the fish that sucks on some sharks, right? Or is it the same?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I'm trying to... I'm sure there's fish that suck on sharks. And in those cases, those are probably the institutional salespeople and the brokerages. But what they've seen is, you know, the margins keep getting, you know, they're in a margin business and they're now washing the cards. I mean, there's not enough value they can provide, right?
Right.
The average investor has stock twists or, you know, they just do. So the broker is calling the client to say, what's happening over there? Because I can't get on stock twists because my brokerage firm is 401, 404'd it. So it's upside down. I know I'm right. I'm not going to tell people to do it my way. I'm only going to tell people what I do. So also the difference between StockTwits and, let's say, Street.com was Street.com was inspirational because he was taking on the Wall Street Journal. He was saying, like, hire a lot of reporters, put them online, we're going to break news, okay, and we're going to add some color commentary like ESPN, okay. But in the end, it became all about Jim Cramer. And in the end, you know, reporters, these institutions, you know, display ads can't support reporters. So now we get to phase two and three of the web, where it's user-generated content, curation tools, and the smartest people rise to the top. Why is it that when you turn on CNBC, the same fucking five people are on Fast Money? I'm sure they're really nice people. I love Josh. But that's impossible that five people are in charge of just telling you what's happening with Fast Money. StockTwits is 24/7 Fast Money, and anybody can be the superhero for the day. You just have to work hard.
Right, so, exactly. Yep.
So that's the way I think it is.
Well, I also think, Howard, let me just say something. You know, I also think there's been a change. There's been really in the last several years, and what I've noticed in the last maybe 3 years, that the old-fashioned media has done a couple of things. And I have a real problem with this. First of all, it's all about who gets to the punch first. Now, don't get me wrong. It's always been who breaks news, right?
Yeah.
But they're to a point where they used to be able to do a lot of vetting of the information, have multiple sides of it, and get the story up. Now, the story comes up so fast without a lot of background and back-checking. And also, many of these reporters are very young without any substantial experience to be really comparing anything. And just, you know, it seems like the news is almost fed to them.
Well, I think, like I wrote yesterday with Andreessen, sorry, I'm remember to get to this, an icon. You, media is paid. Legal and media are paid. They're not earned, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So and the same thing on the journalistic side. They buy their way in with time, okay? And sucking on the nipple of certain people that they want to, it's all ass kissing. Right now, there's great journalists. The great ones have decided to go their own route and start their own business because the tools of starting their own business are incredible. Okay,
yep.
Not to say there's not great writers around the world that are paid well by the New York Times, but I'm not in the business of reading them because by the time they get to a story, the good ones, 7,000 other people have crowdsourced it. Now this is another thing I try to explain to investors: there is no news. The futures is the news, right? If the S&P moves a percent, there's news. If the S&P is not budging, there is no news in the world. If the U.S. dollar and the yen and the pound are not moving, or euro, are not moving, there is no news, right? Yeah, there's news on TV, but there is no news. That's noise, okay? So when I talk about people and they're worried about nickels and dimes, that's the job of the futures trader. My job is to see when events really move markets. Then I turn on the news or find people that I trust to get context. And that's what StockTwits is about.
Oh, that's interesting.
The news is already moving the futures market. So if you have a place to have a pulse of the futures market, then there's news. Once you decide the news, then go to a place you trust and figure out what it means for the futures. When we got Bin Laden, all you had to do was look at the futures to know if it was true or not.
Right.
Okay, now exactly. Trade the futures because, listen, if they're all, the futures can be wrong too. I mean, they move very quickly. They would have reversed. So I don't trade the futures. But once you see the futures sticking for 4 or 5 hours, it's news. It's real news. I don't have to read anything.
Right. Okay? Now let me ask you a question because I do want to just get to this Andreessen story, but I want to ask you about Twitter. One of the, in your long list of investments, you have a little area that says investments I could have made. So Twitter is one of them. Just as full disclosure, we are now short Twitter, and basically at the same price we bought it. Just went into it a couple of days ago. Kind of been in and out of it. Made a little money here, a little money there. I'm talking about valuation. I understand we just talked about evaluation. What's that? But it just seems to me that if you put kind of Twitter in a box and you put Facebook in a box and you put LinkedIn in a box and you kind of bring them all to a party and you say which one of these doesn't belong in terms of long-term potential for expansive growth and revenue, I just don't get the whole Twitter thing.
It's hard to get Twitter because Twitter has attached himself for now to TV. And if we look at the TV statistics, the only thing that matters in TV is live sports and stuff like the Oscars. Now, if they pivot into the financial market, which is, I consider them my only competitor, right? I can only screw this up myself. But the only one with the weight to move into real-time conversation, because they've already taken the cash tag, is Twitter. So either the market's not big enough for Twitter to care, and TV's big enough for them to capture right now, thank goodness, or eventually they will be in the finance. Anything real-time, Twitter will have to swarm towards. In the financial market, the reason we started StockTwits is because when I saw Twitter, I go, I don't care where you went for lunch. I do want to follow smart people, but I prefer to follow smart people that just talk about markets all day because that's what this is about.
Mm-hmm.
So the reason I didn't invest in Twitter is because I didn't think they would ever get it. And to be honest, they've executed well without even caring about my vision for it. Mm-hmm. Meaning they've compounded, I've publicly said this, they've compounded what I think they've wrecked it for a lot of other people, and this is where I think it comes back to haunt them, around the API, around TV, and around the fact that sports figures, while they use Twitter, ESPN's still the place, not Twitter, although ESPN, I'm sure, worries about Twitter too. But that's about it. ESPN and maybe us, but nobody else worries about Twitter because Twitter's an amazing product. The question is, like you said, how do you follow into this valuation? I think they made some cardinal mistakes around pricing. I think the only people they should not let have Twitter data is Reuters, Bloomberg, the API, etc. Mm-hmm. Those are the people that can afford to pay the most because that's what Twitter disrupted. Twitter's whole $2,000 a month product is based around news and chat. Okay?
Right.
Twitter
right.
disrupted both. So what's the first thing they do is they go sell the data to Bloomberg so they can pull it into the machine. That was worth infinity to Bloomberg because that's what disrupts Bloomberg. So Silicon Valley has always let Wall Street off the hook. The Andreessen, moving into the Andreessen Icon thing, I think Icon made a cardinal mistake dragging Silicon Valley back into the Wall Street fight. And it's going to be an epic battle.
Yeah, this is just to kind of bring everybody up to date. This is the whole issue. Icon has not a very large position in eBay, but he's trying to do his activist thing and looking to spin off PayPal. And the thing about this is he's now, because they've resisted, he's going after an old story where supposedly, as he says, that there was some kind of funny business involved in when they spun off Skype or when they were first considering it and when he thought it was a good idea. And then it was done only after it was going to be good for Mark Andreessen, one of the tech guys that is revered in the industry and a private capital guy and a major influence on the tech industry. And now what happens is that he's kind of going back and forth and doing a bit of a slur campaign, frankly, on Andreessen, saying, hey, how do you trust this guy? Because, he only did a spinoff of Skype when it was good for him. And now he's saying a spinoff of PayPal isn't good. How do we know it's not just in his own interest? It's a very interesting process. I mean, I agree with you. I mean, Icon is really, this is getting a little, it's weird, first of all. But
yeah,
it's getting like kind of ugly.
He's old. He who calls the kettle black. Listen, I wrote about this yesterday on my blog. he is in the business of financial bullying. It's working. The stock's up. Okay, so far it's working. He could be selling today and say, you know what? And then Andreessen would have to sue him for slander per se. So he's already made some money on this. And I think he's pushed too far here. And here's why: because Andreessen's not going to walk away from this, because Andreessen and Silicon Valley can't afford to lose this battle. Because guess what? They're so conflicted, Silicon Valley right now. They're in every deal. I mean, everything competes with everything. So in a way, even though Icahn's picking, you know, maybe the wrong person and the wrong battle to pick, there's a real story here, and you know, I've been calling it the conflict crunch. You know, we've had a bull market in tech for so long, and we've had so much liquidity that pretty much all these guys are invested in everything. So in a way, we are trusting these people on the board to recuse themselves. We hope they do. But again, this is why I look at the stock market as everything's rigged. You know, buyer beware. You know, remember who you are in the food chain system. And, you know, eventually these things just do come out. Whether it's embarrassing for Andreessen or Icahn, they don't even care. I mean, and they can't care because they're public figures. But the Icahn story is baloney. You know, if you were Goldman for the last, or any bank for the last 6 years, you've had 800 interns down in the basement chugging out spreadsheets to pitch to eBay to spin off PayPal. And they've said no for 6 years. Icahn just came over the top on a media play, right? Now, if I was Andreessen, I'd come right back over the top in a media play and say, take a look at Icahn Enterprises. That was a pump and dump. I would come back and say, Icahn just pulled a pump and dump on the public by selling his stock at 133 in a secondary, and the stock's 100 went to 110 2 weeks later. Okay, why does, you know, so I mean, the only way to beat Icahn is at his own game, probably. And I think the good news is Andreessen is not going to back down.
I guess the other option is we could give the recommendation, just let it just sit for a while. And if you sit for long enough, I mean, really, Andreessen's a lot younger than Icahn.
Yeah. I mean, but as Ray Kurzweil says, if Icahn lives long enough, there should be drugs that allow him to live forever. So,
right.
We're in an interesting period of time where a lot of people are negative. And the people that aren't are making a shit pile of money.
Yep.
And, you know, that's going to lead to further conflicts down the road, the haves versus the have-nots. This is a case of the haves fighting, which is just ridiculous. They both are not going to look good here. Icahn, you know, with 4X, you know, not dragging Silicon Valley into that would have probably been a good way to go out on top. Now he risks Icahn a lot more, and that just proves to me that it's all about ego and just money. And hopefully he gets some shit jammed back in his face.
Yep. No, I've lost a lot of respect on this deal. Let's just end real quick here on your SL50. You put together a list of the 50 greatest stocks, according to you, that you could own and have a model portfolio and have this list available for a nominal fee on a monthly basis, not as much as they charge for Bloomberg by any means, but $79.95 a month. Yep. So, I mean, this is something, actually, we have something similar to this. We have a Trigger Point Research where we send out alerts on certain stocks. We have a 30-day window, you know, breaking up, breaking down, all that. But this is different. You're kind of like, you have this list that you obviously publish for those that participate in this. Tell me a little bit about this.
Well, I mean, my idea is that I'm trying to, you know, not look for pennies, nickels, dimes, quarters, dollars. I'm trying to look for chunks. And it's a very hard business to do. But once you understand how to do it, you know, I'm trying to, you know, find, you know, if people like what I do, I need to give them an easy way to follow me, right? Because they may not want to tune into StockTwits or my blog. They may trust me and they may say, Howard, you do this. And they may not have enough money to put in my fund. And so this is a solution, a really cheap solution for people to see how I take apart the market on a weekly basis. You know, they get the list, which is where I start from. You know, I only really fish where I think the fish are. Then from that, so that's my list. And then I have a model portfolio, which is even does less, which is then, you know, a portfolio that I've tried to build for myself. I've run a hedge fund for 13 years. It's trying to do, you know, 15%, not beat the S&P, but just trying to do 15% a year, because that's what I think I can do with this model, with very little drawdown. And then it's up to people if they want to use leverage on that. But by putting 40, you know, by keeping 50 to 60% of my money in cash, how can I invest in a trend following model that gives me good returns? And so we're doing that and doing well with that. And then thirdly, for those that, you know, want to swing or take smaller chunks off trends, we offer, you know, 8 to 10 swing setups a day on the long and short side. So it's a little something for everybody, but it's all really around learning how to manage trends and learning how to read the tape. So it's not a lot to digest. It's not something every day. And the model portfolio is really the key product because most people don't have the time. But if they understand the way I think, it's how they can apply my thinking to the markets. And just copy, me. It's a very, you know, non-time consuming way.
Right. And this is the social leverage 50. So it's really technology based, obviously.
It's technology based, meaning you have access to me. You know, there's no gimmicks. You can yell at me. We, you know, if I sell something, you hear about it. And you're not going to hear a lot of buy sell, you know, because I like to be right. But I'm not willing to be wrong for a long time. And those are just two simple philosophies. And once people get to know me, it's a trust thing. But some people don't want to be in my fun. And some people just enjoy reading me and want to do this as a hobby. So you have to give people the tools to allow them to enjoy the language of the market. And that's what we're trying to do.
Yeah, great stuff. Great stuff. Howard Lindzen, we'll make sure to put all the information on the show notes of this episode to get to StockTwits and SL50 and all the other things that you're involved with. I appreciate it. And hopefully it will be less than, I don't know, 4 years till we talk again on the show.
Yeah, nice job. The podcast, I mean, the podcast business, you were early in this. I'm thinking about it myself. It's way better than video.
And yeah, video is hard. I mean, video, you got to first of all look good. You have to set up. You have to have multiple people dealing with it. And when you think about it, some of us are quite better looking on audio than video. Anyway, Howard Lindzen, thanks for joining us. He's thanks for joining us. Howard Lindzen, great information, great opportunity to spend some time with that gentleman who really does have his finger on the pulse when it comes to the social media world, and in particular, social media when it comes to finance. Because it's really important, obviously, to understand all the different aspects of where you can look for information, right? So we know that you can get things on Yahoo and Google and Bloomberg.com and yada, yada. It keeps on going. But what you can't always find is a flow of information. And when you do look at things like Twitter and StockTwits, what's really nice is that you can find that there is a flow of information and kind of crowdsourcing, which not always is the best thing, but it's another tool in your toolbox to use when you're investing. So think about that when you're looking at that. And obviously, do yourself a favor because StockTwits is free, so you might as well try it. You know, we have some great guests coming up, by the way. Jack Schweiger has a new book. It is called Market Wizards, but it's a little book of Market Wizards. It's a little bitty teeny book of Market Wizards. And it's a short one because his other books, if you've ever seen them, are pretty thick. This one is only about, I'm looking at it right now, about maybe 180, 200 pages, small print, but small bind. And he has some information that's great because what he does is he goes out and finds right from the horse's mouth what is going on to make them successful. He looks at those investment advisors out there that are, and hedge funds and, you know, mutual fund managers, and really gets their quote unquote secrets. So that's some cool stuff to take a look at. All right, in closing, let's kind of go over a couple of things. Of course, you want to listen to DH Unplugged. John C. Dvorak and myself, every Tuesday night, we come at you, talk about all sorts of topics, a little bit less formal than you would imagine, but a lot of fun. And we talk about things ranging from the crazy to the very poignant when it comes to the financial markets and everything in between. Of course, if you have any questions, you can always write me at askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. And we are planning an episode coming up in the next couple of weeks where we're going to actually do a very quick take on stocks that you are asking us to review. Kind of like our Oktoberfest, which we call our Stocktoberfest, what we do every October. But do me a favor, if you want to send me a stock, and please do me a favor, first of all, don't send me penny stocks. Don't send me stocks that are illiquid and don't trade, like a 30-cent biotech or something. I can't do any analysis on that. Don't send me something that's an IPO that just came out, unless it's coupons.com, because I'll tell you right now, my answer is probably going to be watch it pop up and then write it down as it's going to move lower, because we all know that they have no real income net income, and the earnings are going to be crap for a long time. And then eventually, if something does turn around, well, that's great. But send me your stock, send it over to askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com, and I will do my best to spend some time reviewing it. We'll look at the fundamentals, we'll look at the technicals, and what we'll do is we'll have it on the show, and we will mention your name, of course, if you would like us to, on that episode. So send those in. I'll put a reminder on this particular show notes. And by the way, if you want, you could easily sign up to be on the mailing list so that when I send out a note that says, hey guys, we're doing a show that's going to be reviewing stocks, you'll get it. You don't have to worry about forgetting about it. Worry about, oh yeah, I should send that in. We'll have it there. Now, what you do is very simple. What you do is you go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com and you go right to the top, right in the top area right there, and there's a little form. Says, what's your first name? What's your last name? What's your email? And push submit. Three things. And you know what? You know the answers. This is really cool. You know the answers to every question. You know your first name, last name, and your email, right? So when you do that, you go into our list, and every time there is an update, we'll send it to you. And as a matter of fact, every single day, there's a digest of the things that happen on the site. So if we're reviewing a stock, talking about economics, a podcast comes out, whatever it may be, you're going to get it in a digest format in order to see it. So this way, you don't have to worry about missing anything. So go over to the site, thedisciplinedinvestor.com, and do check that out. All right, what else do we have coming up? Let's talk about some of the quick economics that are going to be happening next week. Here's the deal. We have a light week of eco coming up, and that oftentimes leads to a market that it drifts higher because, you know, there's not a lot of news. Now, who knows what the headlines are going to be? Listen, we have Crimea, we have Ukraine, right? Russia is already saying, well, F-ske to you-ske, Obama-ske, you know what I mean? And basically saying that, you know what, we really don't want to have the West involved in the things that we're doing. So what do we do? What do we have to do with? At least, what do we know about? Well, we know that China had an 18% reduction in their overall exports, and some people are saying, "Well, that wasn't a big deal. We expected, you know, like down 8%." Hello, down 8%. Let's be honest; it was down 18. So, if you expected it to be down 18 because of lunar holiday and some other oddities with last year's numbers of exports, well, why didn't you predict? And why didn't you then show us the numbers that showed and negative 18%. So, of course, that's the bullish argument. So we know that we have that and the Ukraine issue that is coming to a head. We also know that there was some further gunfighting and some other, I guess it was a takeover of an oil line down in, I believe it was South Africa or Africa region. So that's going to be a little bit of a problem. Okay, but what do we know we have to deal with? Well, we have, on the 11th, wholesale inventories coming in. Now, expectations for the inventories are a plus 4% on a month-over-month basis, and that is compared to a plus 3%. Now, if you remember, I'm going to keep on telling you this because it's really important. When we see that inventories build, it's actually a real negative when it comes to the economy because you're finding that we're not seeing as many of the inventory depletion that we want to see that you would want to see when there's a lot of sales. But at the same time, it is actually good, as crazy as it sounds, for GDP. GDP gets a boost from it because one of the inputs into the calculation for GDP is inventories. What we really want to look for is on the 13th, okay? Because we have the retail sales. We have advanced retail sales. We're looking at a plus 2%. When last month we saw a negative 0.4%, almost about a half a percent down. A lot of that was blamed on the weather. The hope here is, and I got to tell you something, folks, you got to watch this, because if we don't see a snapback from last month that is much greater than the 0.2%, 0.3%, 0.4% range, then I got to tell you something, we have a bigger problem. So we're going to be looking at this. We're going to be looking at the retail sales advance, the retail sales X. Auto and gas is only going to be expected to be up 0.1%. Then we have import prices, of course, after continuing claims on the 13th. Also, import prices are expected to gain by 0.5%. And the index is, although the index is supposed to be down 1.9%, down 1.9%. And then I think the most important thing that we're going to see is the PPI. Now, we'll look at the import prices, we look at the PPI, which is going to be the advance because we have CPI coming out next week. PPI is looking to be up approximately 0.2%. Really not much going on there. I would dare say that we're probably going to see that there is a significant increase in the CPI and the PPI due to things related to oil, petroleum, as well as any kind of food products. And then finally, on Friday, what we're going to see is the University of Michigan's March preliminary number, which is expected to be 82 from an 81.6 the previous month. So there you have it. Some earnings still coming out. We'll talk about that next week a little bit more. And like I said, this Tuesday coming up at 11 o'clock, we do have a webinar over at TradeStation. On Wednesday, TriggerCharts.com, we're going to be talking about some of the newest and latest things that are available now on TradeStation from TriggerCharts. One of the things is a big reveal. We're going to actually give you a sneak peek into the indicator that we've been working on for a very long time, probably about 4 months now, to get a multiple time frame in the autopilot so you could actually see it in a row from left to right instead of up and down. Now that may not seem like a big deal, but let me tell you, it is a big deal because the way the programming and way that the whole system works, this is major. So you're able to find out, say, let's say if the 60-minute, the 240-minute, the daily, if they're all starting to pop into the green and along, hey, maybe it's something you should get into. We'll talk about that at length. If you do want to check that out and actually be a part of that free webinar, space is limited, but it is free. And you can go over to TriggerCharts.com, and there's stuff all over the place to help you sign up. Other than that, thanks for joining me. Information over to AskAndrew@TheDisciplinedInvestor.com. Twitter, Andrew Horowitz, and you know the rest. I'll see you soon. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor, regulated in various states. None of the information presented it should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.